Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wakefield Crowbar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees live at Wakefield Crowbar, 954 Wakefield Drive. You're looking for a spot. You're cruising around right now. You're looking for a place to have some lunch. This is the spot. If you're looking for a place to watch the Astros at 2:37, this is the spot. You can listen to the national broadcast right here on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5 as well. We're going to be going off the air at 2 o'clock to make way for the pregame, but we'll be carrying over the conversation, a little Killer Bee Manning cast type of stuff as we get you ready for the Astros and Mariners.
Will it be on Twitch too?
I don't think so. I think just ESPN 97.5.com. Wilhouse will be doing that for their show as well. So
Jake's really fired up about that. They're going
to
do great.
Well, he should be fine. The Yankees got rained out today, so he has nothing else to do.
Oh, did they really already?
They already got rained out, yeah. And apparently the weather tomorrow doesn't look great either. It looks better than it did today, obviously. But, yeah, rained out. So the Astros and Mariners, the only show in town today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yankees, okay.
Yankees Guardians rained out. But this is a perfect spot. You're looking for a place to watch the game. Swing on by Wakefield Crowbar. Hang out with us until 3. Wheelhouse until 7. 24-foot TV wall. Wall-to-wall TVs. There's not a bad seat in the house. Great food. Great bar. Full kitchen and bar. And if you get here before 2 o'clock, you can take advantage of that $9 Pick 2 Express Lunch Special. Also $22 Crawford Bock Buckets during the Astros games. $1 Jell-O Shots during the Astro games as well. Where can you find that? Jell-O shots for a buck during the Astro games. Also, if you're ever looking for a place to watch UFC and a little bit of boxing pay-per-view and you don't want to pay a cover, Wakefield Crowbar, one of the very few places in this city that charges nothing to walk in
That's
and watch
a great
some
deal.
UFC and pay-per-view. I'm going to keep that in mind, as should
you. Love the sweet science and
I really
UFC.
Do.
Yep.
I really do. I'll be honest, I'm probably a little bit more of a casual these days than anything else, but I do enjoy some of the...
You got nothing else going on.
I've been trying to challenge Jake Paul to a fight. I'm really trying to go at Jake Paul on Twitter. That way we can do a little Branham versus Jake Paul, $1 million, wherever. I don't care.
Can we boost it a little bit? I'll be your corner guy. Just overpay me.
I mean, it depends on how much of a cut you're looking for.
I mean, but I'll help.
Wouldn't want to watch Jake Paul versus Branham in the squared circle?
I think there's plenty of people that would like to make sure Jake Paul doesn't let up on you.
I get a few $1 million and, you know, I'd be happy. All right, Astros have made a couple of changes to the lineup today. We talked about Trey Mancini, Aledmys Diaz in that DH spot. I think we're kind of on the same page that, hey, look, ride a hot hand. Trey Mancini had the first opportunity to show you that he could be hot. He didn't in game one. Aledmys Diaz today in game two, he has an opportunity. If he gets a hit or two, hey, he's your starter in the DH spot in game three. Ride the hot hand. Center field, another change for the Houston Astros. Chaz McCormick, who actually had a hit in game one. The Astros going with Jake Meyers. Jake Meyers has been an interesting story. Of course, tore his labrum last year in the playoffs. Battled back to get here this year. Dusty Baker said they called him up too early. It's hard to say that he was wrong because he struggled whenever he was with the Astros, got sent back down to Sugar Land, had a really good September, got called up late in the year, and here Jake Meyers is getting a start in center field for the Houston Astros today. How are you feeling about
that? That's a question I was going to ask you because I said, and I think Creighton and I, when you were out, we were talking about this too. Creighton was like, he wanted to see Jake in center and he wanted to see Chaz in left. And I said, no, I never want to see that lineup. Because it takes away a lot of pop, and I'm not sure which Jake I'm going to get. Look, I think Jake earned his spot onto the playoff roster. You and I talked about it when he got sent down. You either shut him down or you make sure that you give him every ample opportunity to get his head right, to get everything from his body right in AAA, and then you bring him back up and you give him one more shot, and you called it first that he belonged on the playoff roster. He showed them enough and obviously us enough to be on the playoff roster. But starting this soon gave me a little bit of a hesitation. I looked at it and I'm like, I'm not sure I'm ready to do that just yet because I'm not sure that I've seen enough of playoff Jake to think that he's going to be confident playing defense, that he's not going to be afraid of a wall on a warning track or afraid to dive coming in for a baseball, and he can't – can he throw? I mean, is his throwing better? Mm. And then from a hitting perspective, can he face a guy like he's going to face today and not look overmatched like he looked for a majority of the season this year? I hope the answers to all those are yes. I hope he's ready to go. But I wouldn't start him yet.
Dusty actually talked about that with Jake, about how he needs to see him be more assertive, not as tentative as we saw. You always point to the couple of times when he would go back to the wall where he was tentative early when he got caught up for the
gunshot.
Astros.
Yeah.
I would point to the ones where he was coming in from center field and not taking charge as a center fielder. One led to the collision of Pena and Yordan Alvarez, where it's like, dude, you're the center fielder. That's your ball.
Or the dives, whether he caught it or didn't,
yeah,
whether it was the left shoulder or the right shoulder, immediately after hitting the ground, he was going to the shoulder as if something was wrong. You can't have a guy that's not as close to 100% as he can be being out in center field, as important a position as that is, in the playoffs.
Now, Jake Meyers isn't replacing Ken Griffey Jr., but no. Jake Meyers isn't Ken Griffey Jr.
Right.
I'm not sure that this was the game I would have done it in. Like, I'm not going to die on this hill. I'm not overly, like, mad that Jake Meyers is getting a start. In fact, I'm a little intrigued to see him getting a start again for the Houston Astros in a playoff, in a game two. The reason that I don't love it today in the second game, although it seems like Chaz McCormick has a pretty long swing and he's facing a dude that can run it up at 101 miles per hour. What are the chances of Chaz having success against Luis Castillo? Probably not great. But one of the reasons I don't like it in game two is because, look, Chaz did have a hit in game one. I don't like the idea of sitting a dude who was 1-for-2 in game one for Jake Meyers, who's really given you nothing at the big league level in 2022. I don't love the message that sends. Secondly, I do think that Jake Meyers is a better outfielder defensively than anything else you have in center field. He's got more range. He's got more speed. Yes, his arm is questionable at the very best, but he covers more ground than anybody else. James Click would tell you that he's elite defensively with his range. But Framber Valdez is a ground ball pitcher. So, like, why don't you wait until you have somebody who gives up a little bit more fly balls, like Justin Verlander, like Christian Javier, if Javier ever gets a start. So the two reasons I don't love it today in game two, because Chaz had a hit in game one, to me he earned a start today. And secondly, if he's your best defensive center fielder, why behind a ground ball pitcher?
Yeah, I like it when you're up 2-0 in a series or you've got a commanding lead in a series and you can say, hey, look, we've got a little bit more leeway to play with here. Let's put Jake in center field. And you make a great point about a ground ball pitcher versus a fly ball pitcher. I'm very concerned about him at the plate, and it has nothing to do with Chaz, because you're right. Chaz, and I've always complained about this with you, is the fact that he's got a very long swing. And the fact is that long swing can work well when you got pus ball pitchers that are trying to paint corners and throw a lot of pus ball.
Okay.
They don't have a plus fastball. They got a plus ball, but they can, you know, they can paint corners and they can throw a lot of breaking stuff at you. Then, you know, you can see a guy like Chaz get in there, and he likes to take a lot of balls to right field. When you're facing straight gas and you're getting that plus fastball gunned at you, you can't have a guy that's winding up and taking an hour to get it through the zone. That's why I have a little bit of concern, but that doesn't mean that I would start Jake in his place. I would just say, hey, look, we understand that's going to be an issue for this game, but I need him in center field because he's my most experienced center fielder that's the healthiest. I was questioning it. I don't really like it. I am intrigued, like you say, but this is not a time to be experimenting per se.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm a little concerned about.
Look, if Chaz was hitless today, Jake gives a chance in a game three, in which Seattle's a little bit of a bigger ballpark, too. So interesting they go game two instead of game three. 7560 texting in, which you can as well, 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We are season ticket holders, and we love Jake. Chaz is great, too, but Jake has a better bat if you watch close. I think Jake at his very best has a bigger upside offensively than Chaz McCormick. I do not disagree with that.
James Click calls him his center fielder of the future.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the texture.
That's fine.
But who has a better chance to have offensive success today on October 13th, 2022 in game two of the ALDS? I'm not sure the answer to that question is Jake.
I'm not either.
But I'm also not willing to bet a whole lot of money on Chaz McCormick. It's why I don't hate it. It's why I'm not going to die on it.
It's like a double-edged sword because there's no great answer. But I think the right answer for right now is still Chaz McCormick in center field. I think that, like I said, if you want to get I keep referring to it as getting cute as a manager. But if you want to, when you're in a really position of strength, you're up a couple games in a series, you want to put Jake out there, fine, so be it. Then see exactly what you have. But also notate, if it's not what you wanted to see, be strong enough mentally to be able to say, he's still our center fielder of the future, but it's all about going and winning as many games as you possibly can right now until you win 11 games this postseason. And so I'm going to be bullish and say, he's shown me what I needed to see, and he's not the guy for this postseason run. He still can be the guy for your future, but you've got to be able to make a very honest decision when you throw him out there. So all eyes are on Jake tonight and today, and you want to see from his throwing arm to his aggressiveness in the outfield to his ability to be able to time up a fastball and make good quality major league at bats. I'm just not sure when you didn't exactly set the world on fire in game one until the very end that you want a guy out there and you're trying to evaluate him in a situation where you're trying to take a commanding lead in the series.
Maybe we'll get a little bit of Branham foot and mouth on this one, and Myers would go 3-for-4 with a dong or something like that.
Be great.
Being a hero in game two. We would love to talk about that tomorrow. The Astros lineup, other than those two, I think everything else is standard. Altuve, Pena, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Yuli, Diaz, Myers, Maldonado. I guess you can't have the catcher question. Maldonado, Vasquez. We expect to see Vasquez as a starter at some point in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Not today, though. You okay with Maldonado getting the start behind the dish in game two?
I am, for the reasons we talked about earlier. I am, because you've got such a volatile, emotional pitcher that you need to play a mental game with in Fromber. You need someone that can go out there and reel him in a hurry. And like I said, if he's ticked off because he's not getting the calls from an umpire, or a guy, you know, had a mishap defensively that he can't put out of his mind, Maldi's the guy that goes in and grabs him by the back of the neck and says, you know what, you can't worry about all that. You control what you can control. You know what you control? Your pitches. And starting with the next pitch, you need to focus. And that's what I like. I don't think Vasquez is there all the way yet, and he shouldn't be based on just joining this team. Maldi's the guy that does that, so that's fine for him.
And we'll probably still see Vasquez, you know, late in the game if the Astros need some offense. There's only one pitcher that I would be 100% Martin Maldonado has to catch. If you told me that Martin Maldonado is not going to be your starting catcher for every single playoff game with the exception of one starter,
JV.
Nope. It's Framber Valdez.
Okay.
I think Framber Valdez needs Martin Maldonado more than any other pitcher in this rotation. So if Maldonado's behind the dish every time Framber's on the mound, I'm okay with that.
The only thing with JV is the fact that Vasquez never caught him, did he?
I'm not sure he did.
I don't think he did. I think
maybe
that's the
one
reason why I would throw that in.
That's
there.
Fine, too. Like, he's probably a close second. Mm-hmm. But Framber more than anybody else, because I think Framber needs his guidance more than anything else. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees at Wakefield Crowbar, 954 Wakefield Drive. Great place. We're going to be here until 3, hanging out. I hope to see you. The Wheelhouse will be here until 7. Come see them. 4-5-6 Happy Hour every weekday, 11A to 6P. $4 select drafts, Hornitos, Onion Ring Tower, $5 fried pickles, Deep Eddy Vodka, House Wine, $6 boneless wings, Frozens, and Maker's Mark. So swing on by. We got some diehards already here that are ready for the Astros and Mariners Game 2 of the ALDS. We are going to talk a little bit of football today. We'll do it whenever we return. How far are you willing to go with this Texan secondary? Is it good? Great? Pretty good? Below average? Where are you with it? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, right now I want to tell you about my good friends again at MyBookie. Look, they've got promotions going all the time, but they have the biggest online selection of odds and contests to fill all your sports betting needs anytime, anywhere. It's like I always tell you to do. It's the only place you need to go when you want to make even the most uninteresting game more interesting, and they take care of you in a variety of ways. Bet on NFL, MLB playoffs, NCAA football, big cash prizes in weekly blackjack tournaments. Bet you didn't know that. They've got it all, and it's all waiting for you at any time. It's the right time. Get in on the action, and the time is now. Make your winning move today. Sign up at MyBookie. Use the promo code BET975 and claim your deposit match up to $1,000. They'll double your next deposit up to $1,000 and make the most uninteresting games more interesting by putting more money in your account, which has more money means more money in your account, more games you can bet on, and more chances to win. When you win, they're going to pay you as well, but it's all about going to the right spot where your money is protected, where they take care of the customer, and where you get the best odds. That's why you go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code BET975, and they'll take care of you every step of the way. You can pay with everything from Bitcoin to a credit card, and when you win and want your money, they're going to pay it out too. Check them out right now. Go to mybookie.ag, put in that promo code BET975, and do what I tell you to do. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I encourage you to do it. It's mybookie.ag.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wakefield Crowbar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees live at Wakefield Crowbar, 954 Wakefield Drive. Drink specials, food specials, full kitchen, full bar. Great place to watch the Astros game today. We'll be here until 3. Wheelhouse will be here until 7 o'clock. We get into the Texan secondary in a moment. 8437, what's the reasoning behind having Maldonado behind the plate instead of Vasquez? Vasquez offers way better offense. He was also catching his pitchers for long enough for them to be comfortable with him. I just don't see the reason for him to not be the guy behind the plate. His defense is above average, too.
Look, we've been through the defensive part of this. What people don't realize, because Vasquez came so late in the season, Vasquez's defense is as good or better than Maldi, so you can't start with that. The main reason he's out there is exactly what we've talked about in the last segment, the fact that you've got a guy on the mound that you have to kind of keep an eye on at all times, and the fact that he has a bit of a fragile psyche with letting kind of distractions get the best of him. That's the main reason that he's out there. I understand that Vasquez, where he does have the biggest sizable difference is offensively, and it's night and day. But because we know whether some of it is just sensationalized by things like, you know, perfect innings and no-hitters by a combined staff, those are the kind of things that get blown up too big. But the thing that you can't put a value on, like your mound visits, is the fact that when he makes a mound visit, when it relates to Framber Valdez, yeah, there is meaning behind it.
To me, being able to guide a pitcher through the game is very, very important. It's more important than potentially the offense, more important potentially than the defense. The difference between Maldonado and Vasquez defensively, I don't think is much
it's at slight.
All. Like if there's anything there, it is slight. We saw Vasquez throw out a runner in game one. I'm not sure Vasquez isn't better at blocking pitches in the dirt, too. I mean, how many times have we seen Maldonado allow some what are called wild pitches?
He gets lazy sometimes on one leg. And
you don't think he should do that in the playoffs, which
right.
We haven't seen that, and he hadn't done that. So I benefited the doubt there. But it's guiding a Framber Valdez through a game. Like, we know that Framber Valdez at times can be a little bit erratic, right? Has a sports psychologist.
Yep.
I think Maldonado is the guiding hand for Framber Valdez, is why Martin Maldonado has to be behind the dish for Framber. That's why I said in the previous segment, I don't care if Maldonado's not your starter for any of the other pitchers. But for Framber, I think it is the most important for Martin Maldonado's value to this team.
And again, Jeremy, it's like we talked about when we talked about the luxury of being in the position they were over the last month of the season. They were going to win the division. They were going to win the American League. So they had the luxury of experimenting. And you wanted Vasquez to get some outings with some of these guys just in case, from injury or otherwise, in case they wanted to go that direction in the playoffs. But when it comes down to comfortability makes a big difference in the playoffs. But also, as we talked about, it's a business. And it is business making time right now, and it is big deal making time. It isn't that same luxury you had in the final month. This is win or go home time, and when you're talking about win or go home time, you want your best pitchers to be in the best position to win. That means, from Framber's perspective, to be as comfortable as possible with who's calling the pitches and who he's listening to, who's trying to keep him dialed in and focused. And I think that for him, you're right. I think we nailed it on the two pitchers. It's going to be JV and it's going to be Framber. JV because he didn't throw to Vasquez, and because he's so particular about certain things, like we knew having Dubon in center field in the regular season. That's not happening in the playoffs.
No.
And then Framber pitching to the guy that he had the most success with, that he feels the most comfortable with, that he can take criticism from, and that's Maldi.
713-780-ESPN. How far are you willing to go with this Texan secondary? 713-780-3776.
I'll let Stevie Nelson relief if they're up 7 today. I see what we did.
I've been pleased with the secondary. I think Derek Stingley Jr. has been fine as a rookie, maybe even good. Jalen Petrie's been good as a rookie. Steven Nelson's free agent signing, as you pointed out, has been really good. And Jonathan Owens is better than I ever thought Jonathan Owens was going
to
be.
He's a tackler, because he has to be.
Yeah, and that's not great that he has so many tackles, but that he can make those tackles and be fine in coverage, things like that. I'd never thought that Jonathan Owens was going to be more than, like, one of the fringe guys on the roster. The fact that he's your starting, really, free safety has exceeded my expectations. How far are you willing to go with this secondary, though?
I was going to say exceed my expectations or give me a little bit of concern, like, because there's nobody else on the roster worthy he's starting. look, I think he's a serviceable defensive back and a safety on this team. I don't know that in an ideal world that I'd have him starting, but I think that he's done a good job in making sure he can make tackles and do things he needs to do. I love Stevie Nelson. I think that as much as they swung and missed on former first-round picks that they either picked up on waivers or acquired for a song and then turned out that they got the song and dance on.
And to be fair, that was more O'Brien.
No, and right, exactly. But I'm just saying in the history of this team, especially in the recent history of what the secondaries look like and where guys have come from, they did not swing and miss on Stevie Nelson. He was not a cheap, short-term guy that just fills a roster spot. This guy can still play. He plays at a very high level. I love what he brings to the table in terms of not only his veteran leadership with a kid like Stingley, but a guy that can still cover and make tackles. And we all know that we love Petrie back there as the last defense in the secondary that can also come up and hit. So I think it's actually exceeding expectations from a team perspective when you look at position groups. I think the secondary, which had a lot of question marks coming in, quite frankly, because we didn't know what Stingley was going to do health-wise or otherwise as he got his feet wet and probably was going to get burned a time or two. Now you look at it and you say, look, as much as you can scrutinize the linebackers and say that we need help there and they're not nearly what we were hoping for, secondary has been good for me.
Maybe this is us grasping at positivity on a bye week because the linebacker core, I think, is the worst unit on this team, even worse than the
tight
quarterback
ends.
Position. Oh. I think the tight end position, you've actually gotten production. The problem is you're getting production from players who weren't on the roster 2 weeks before the season started.
I need to see O.J. Howard.
That's fine. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. But O.J. Howard and Jordan Akins have probably been your best two tight ends, and they weren't on the roster 2 weeks before your season started. So that kind of is worrisome while also being good. I don't know. But how far, you said pretty good with the secondary. That's about where I'm willing to go with where their secondary is at right now. I feel like pretty good with this secondary. Jonathan Owens, is he like an average NFL starter at the safety position? Maybe not. Maybe he's a little below average, but he hasn't hurt you. And he's been overall steady. Jalen Petrie, I think, is going to be a future like top five, top ten safety in this league. I feel the same thing about Derek Stingley Jr. And Stevie Nelson's like that perfect complement.
Yep.
That perfect number two. Like, is he a cornerback one in the NFL where he's going to lock down top receivers week in, week out? Probably not. But is he like good for a cornerback two? I think so.
If he doesn't have to, and the intangible is that leadership role. That veteran, been there, done that, that can help groom another guy on your roster or two. He's going to help Petrie. He's going to help Stingley. And they're helping him because he doesn't have to do things he's not capable of doing anymore. Or guarding the one on the other side as the number one receiver. I think it's a perfect complementary secondary right now from the meeting rooms in the locker room to the field, and that's why I think it's going to get better as the season gets longer because you know you built up chemistry, and Stingley does get his feet wet, and he gets more experience, and he gets better, so does Petrie. I like where they're at, but I also like where it's going as opposed to a year ago when you were throwing guys in there and out there that you're like, they're not going to be here more than a year, and they're really not the kind of player you want to build your team around.
And if you're looking at it from a future point of view as well, like you're looking at it for years in advance, they're also in a position where you don't have to address the secondary. Last draft, they drafted Stingley at number three. They drafted Jalen Petrie very early in the second round. They used premium picks to improve the secondary, and maybe the secondary is not complete. Maybe you need that additional safety. But they're in a spot where you're not going to draft, I don't think, a member of the secondary in the first three rounds. Like, you're going to be addressing other needs. I can't imagine the scenario in which the Texans are drafting a corner with a top three-round pick. I can't envision a scenario in which the Texans are drafting a safety with a top three-round pick.
I think, look, they covered their bases, so to speak, at least as much as they needed to for the time being. And there's other position groups that we know that are more dire that need more attention. And we touched on a few of them, starting with quarterback and then looking at your front seven as it relates to especially your linebackers. And then, of course, tight end and other positions. We don't know if Nico Collins is going to continue to get better. We don't know what Brandon Cook's future long-term is, but we know it's not going to be very long-term.
Even if you do rely on both of those guys, like, okay, Cook's going to be here for two or three more years. Nico Collins, like, he had a really good game. Let's be, like, over the moon, optimistic with him. Let's just say John Metchie is going to be a total hit. I still totally like the idea of drafting a game-changing receiver.
No question. A deep threat. Because Mechie is the big question mark. And, again, it starts with just, as a human being, get him healthy and then see what he can be and do for you. But, yeah, no doubt about it. And then offensive line. I mean, as much as you drafted a guard and you've got tackle issues. Because you don't know if you're going to keep him or not. Tunsil doesn't really want to be here long-term, I don't think.
He's been good, though.
But he's been good for the short term. Now, does that mean that he has trade value and that you're going to try and move him along at a certain point, continue this youth movement? Then you go out and get yourself a tackle in the draft. If you don't know what you want to do with Howard, or because you have put up or shut up time with Howard and you're not convinced he's a guy that's shown you enough to do what he needs to do, go get his replacement. So I think line is still something that you're going to focus on. And like you said, there's other position groups that are going to command your attention to where you're not going to continue to dip into that well.
713-780-ESPN 8894 says Texan secondary is just good, which is fine, but can only be so effective with the offense consistently losing time of possession battles with teams. That's true, and it speaks to the whole complimentary football thing. Mad Dog Chris Russo was on with the bench earlier today. He talked about how demoralizing game one was. How demoralizing was it? And does the off day matter yesterday? How does Seattle enter today's game? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Look, there's plenty of people at the station that continue to tell you how great Doc Linville is with his NeoGraft procedure. I'm one of those guys because I didn't know what Doc Linville did, and I didn't know that he could do something for me until he said, I want to sit down with you sometime and explain to you the NeoGraft procedure. When he explained it to me, I realized that, hey, there are solutions to guys that are going through hair loss, and it doesn't mean sprays and creams and foams and all those things that just mask the problem. It actually solves the problem. It's your own hair. And he takes areas of your head where you have a ton of hair, and genetically you're never going to lose it, and that's the sides and the back, and takes it and moves it to where you need it most. Some people's forehead has turned into an 8-head. Other people have a baboon's butt showing on the top of their head because they don't have the coverage they once had. Whether you're thinning or balding or completely it's gone, it can come back thanks to the NeoGraft procedure. Listeners to ESPN 97.5 could benefit because of the fact that consultations with Doc and his staff normally are $150. You want one? You get one for free by going to 975hair.com because you're a listener to ESPN 97.5. Go to that consultation. Set it up at 975hair.com. Then ask all the questions. Find out how long the procedure takes. Find out recovery, when you're going to see the full results. And more importantly, the number one stat find out, which I found out, which convinced me, 95%+ of the follicles moved are going to stay and grow and be with you for the rest of your life. That was the game changer for me. That made a difference, and it's going to make a difference for you too. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by, because Doc Linville's the best in the business, in my opinion. Go to 975hair.com.
Live from Wakefield Crowbar for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, broadcasting live from Wakefield Crowbar. Great food, great drinks, full kitchen and bar. The 4-5-6 happy hour, $4 select drafts, Hornitos, Onion Ring Tower, $5 fried pickles, who doesn't love that, Deep Eddie Vodka and House Wine, $6 boneless wings, Frozens, and Maker's Mark. Wall-to-wall TVs, they also have the giant 24-foot TV wall. Perfect spot for lunch, perfect spot to watch the Astros today. We'll be here for another hour and a half. Woolhouse will be here until 7. Also, if you're looking for a place ever to watch UFC, big card coming up, by the way. Also looking to watch some pay-per-view boxing. Wakefield Crowbar never charges a cover. You can't beat that. So keep that in mind whenever you're looking for a place to watch some UFC, when you're looking to watch some boxing. But today it's about the Astros. So swing on by, hang out with us, hang out with the Wheelhouse, and enjoy some dollar Jello shots for every Astro playoff game. That is also something you cannot beat.
I would like to talk to you about the Jello pudding. Oh, no, sorry.
Who's that?
I pretty much am not going to mention who that is. I think
I'm surprised you went there. I'm a little surprised you went there.
I just did the impression. I didn't say who it was.
The Jell-O pudding, I think, was a dead giveaway. It just took me a second.
Okay.
Most famous Temple Owl alum?
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I thought you genuinely didn't get it.
I didn't for a second. I didn't get it.
That was
it. It took
Huxtable?
Me a second. Yeah, yeah, Cliff the Huxtables. Yep. Oh, I'm just moving on. Mad Dog Russo. We know Mad Dog Russo. We have him on.
Stevie A. Smith.
Dusty was on with Mad Dog Russo yesterday, actually, on the High Heat show he does on MLB Network, and maybe tipped his hand on the rest of the series if it goes 4, if it goes 5. Mentioned the fact that Framber Valdez could be a possible scenario on short rest in a Game 5. Verlander, Game 4 on full rest. Perhaps that is the way that the Astros go. But Russo had something interesting to say when he was on with John and Lance this morning on the bench, talking about the morale of Seattle, where they're at head-wise.
If you look at these best of five since 1969, you find me a team that lost a game like Seattle did there on Tuesday afternoon, and they came back and won a series. So that's the first thing. I think the Astros are going to get through this. Maybe Seattle wins a game, but I think Houston's going to get through this.
So that was Russo talking about where Seattle could be in terms of the mental side. Does the way the Astros won Tuesday make you feel better from a momentum point of view?
It does. Because, look, I said I was concerned about the fact that the Mariners were in control of game one and coming off the momentum of the Blue Jays series and building on being in control of the majority of game one, it was like this big climbing the mountain moment where they continued to feel like they were unstoppable. And then all in one big blow, you absolutely sent them back down the mountain, sent them all the way to the ground, and basically said them, you're going to stay there dealing with whatever you got to deal with, and it's on you to see if you can get off the canvas and come back to try and throw another haymaker or two. This is a different story if we're talking about the Yankees, if we're talking about the Dodgers, if we're talking about a team that is playoff seasoned with a ton of veterans in the locker room that have been through all the different emotions and battles that they've been through to come back and say, you know what, guys, it's one game. We can come back from this. But because you're talking about a young up-and-coming team that was riding a wave of emotion, that was trying to do what everybody said you couldn't do, and they came crumbling down really, really, really fast. I think that's where it can have that kind of effect that Mad Dog's talking about. I think we'd be talking about a different scenario if you were talking about another series with the Yankees where you've got Rizzo and you've got Judge and you've got these guys that have been there and done that that said, you know what, it's just one game.
You know, Borny mentioned to us when we had him on a little bit earlier about how, look, they're a team that handled adversity in the wild card series, came back in game two. I would point out that there's some major differences there, though, between the wild card series game two and what happened in game one. The biggest is that they didn't lose in the wild card series. They still came back and won that game. So they didn't handle a loss.
Yep.
Also, who you're facing. Like, the Astros, for lack of a better way to put it, have been the Mariners' daddies really for a while. So, like, there is the stigma that they are the Astros. And this stigma with the Astros exists pretty much across baseball, that they are the standard in the American League. They are the team to beat in the American League. And Seattle knows that. So Seattle knowing that, and then the fact that they actually lost the game. Like, they went from going into that ninth inning, they're three outs and then eventually one out away from being 1-0 on the defending American League champions at their park with Justin Verlander on the mound. So you go from that feeling, which, I mean, you're up 1-0, Verlander on the mound, you just need to win three games in an ALDS, and then all of a sudden you're down 1-0? That's a big swing. That's a huge punch.
It really is, because when you think about it, the way management and the coaching staff would tell you that you have to approach a series against a beast like you're talking about in the Astros is you can't afford to make any mistakes. You've got to play your best series, and you've got to capitalize on every opportunity, especially in a short series. And if you do A, B, and C, you have a chance to dethrone the longtime reigning AL champs. When you don't do it, and you know you didn't do it, and you know that's one of those areas, variables, and situations that you were supposed to capitalize on, it will linger. So regardless of whether you had a day off or not, I think as the guys went back to the hotel, as they had conversations with their loved ones and others, they were like, I can't believe we let that one get away. And that's where I think it has that kind of effect on a younger team that it might not have as much of an effect on a veteran team.
Hey, you and I were a little bit like on different pages in terms of the day off. You think that the day off can be can hurt them more.
A detriment, because it's still there.
And look, I don't think there's a right answer here. Like, it could go either way. We don't know. That it lingers more, that they sit on it, that they stew on it for longer and it bothers them more. I like it from the aspect of, like, no day off, they're stunned, they don't really know how to react, and then you have a chance to deliver that knockout blow because they still have that element of being stunned, not really knowing what happened to them. That said, I don't think that the day off has, like, flipped the momentum. Like, the Astros still have the momentum in this series, but what I think is critical is that you don't allow the Mariners to, like, feel confident again. Because, look, if Luis Castillo wins today, the Mariners win today, you split the two games in Houston and you still home field advantage.
As much momentum as you built up and as much confidence as you now have that the Mariners had coming in, that all changes today with a loss. Yep. If you lose today, you go back to Seattle tied at one and you realize now the onus is on you to try and get this thing back to Houston or to win two.
Yeah.
Well, now there's a different level of pressure and a little different focus, and the fact that is it's more put on the Astros again than it would be on the Mariners.
I don't even think it's a loss, though. Like Seattle, like, they're stunned, right? Like, they lost game one in this really crazy fashion, the only time it's been done in playoff history. They had Verlander on the ropes. They should be up 1-0 and beating the American League Cy Young. Instead, they're down 1-0, but they have Castillo on the mound. But, like, if they score two runs in the first, all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're good. We're good. We got Castillo going. We're about to steal home field advantage.
Are they or aren't they? Because I agree, for the moment, that can kind of take some of that edge off of them.
Right.
But I think then in the back of their mind, they're thinking, but we've been there and done this before.
Sure.
And they still beat us. So now they're still going to keep in the back of their mind, hey, we still got to close this deal,
right,
and there's going to be a little extra pressure and pressing because they know they didn't the first
time. No, I hear where you're at, and I understand that. But from, like, an Astros perspective, it's like put your foot on the neck of the snake.
Yep.
Like, you got to keep your foot on the throat because, like, I really think that if the Astros can do that, I think they can win this series in three.
I agree.
Like, but they got to keep that. They got to keep that their foot on the throat.
No question about it. I think if the Astros win this one, now they're demoralized. Now they're looking for moral victories. They're looking for a full house to celebrate the return to the playoffs and appreciate the fact that at least they got there and they can build off of it. But now they're just trying to salvage things in a series instead of thinking that they're going to go out there and win it. And if you're the Astros, you say, hey, man, now we're free swinging. Now we feel great knowing that we like to close the door as quick as possible, move on to the next series, watch it and see who we're going to play, and prepare for bigger and better battles to come. And I think that this is a huge momentum swing game for both teams. We can say that, oh, the Astros are riding all the momentum and riding the wave right now. That all changes if they lose today. And now a veteran ball club, unlike the Mariners, the veteran leadership better step up and better get down to brass tacks when you're the Astros getting on that plane saying, we got a job to do, and we got to get this thing done as quick as possible because we can't let this thing linger from a pitching perspective, from our goals for the year perspective. So many different ways we can't be what the Mariners just went through, and we've got to get ready.
Yep, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees live, Wakefield Crowbar. We'll be here until 3, Wheelhouse until 7. Great spot to watch the Astros. Great spot for a bite and a drink as well. Winning with the offense in Game 1. Why I think that is so critical for the Astros in a deep playoff run as opposed to winning with the pitching. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wakefield Crowbar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees live at Wakefield Crowbar, 954 Wakefield Drive. 24-foot TV wall, wall-to-wall TVs, place to watch the Astros game. Happy hour specials until 6 o'clock. We'll be here until 3. We'll be going off the air at 2 o'clock, though. We'll make way for the pregame show, the national broadcast, ESPN broadcast, Astros Mariners Game 2. Pregame show will be starting at 2 o'clock, so we'll be carrying our show over to ESPN975.com. The Wheelhouse will be carrying their show on ESPN975.com until the conclusion of the postgame show after the Astros Mariners. But this is the spot to hang out with us. This is the spot to come watch the Astros as well. So Game 1. Why I feel like if you're going to win Game 1, you win Game 1 however way you win Game 1, right? Whatever. But the fact that it was done with the offense gives me reason for optimism for the long run of this series, more so than if it was done so by pitching. Going into the postseason, Blankers, the Astros' best pitching staff in the American League, the numbers back it up, blah, 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 blah. We know the numbers by now. One of the, I wouldn't call it a concern, but one of the questions you had about the Astros making a deep playoff run is, would they hit, right?
Yep.
Like, are they going to get the timely hits? Are they going to put together the big innings? Are they going to put together the rallies late in the game? The Astros really weren't a great come-from-behind team in the regular season this year as opposed to some of the years of the past. But whenever you're down against a team that's desperate to win Game 1, everybody's desperate to win Game 1, desperate to beat you certainly in Game 1 as well. But to do it with the bats, to me, gives me optimism that, okay, you got the timely hits. You got the big hit with Yordan. You got the unsung heroes, whether it was Hensley, whether it was Pena. You had Bregman keeping you in the game in the eighth inning. You had some hits. Yuli Gurriel was massive in that game. He had the home run, had three hits as well. The offense, like, doing that in Game 1 gives me the belief that what we saw in the regular season, like, it was fine. They were top three, I think, in the American League in runs. But that there's still more meat on that bone. That they can go from being the third best offensive team in the American League to maybe closer to the top team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. When you look at the top of the lineup and the fact that all season long you and I would go back and forth dissecting who's hot, who's not, can they resurrect their careers in the case of Yuli and save it to the point, or a Bregman of asking and wondering, you know, could he get back to his top form? And if not his top form, could he get back to all-star level form or a quality level of form that we've learned to expect from Alex Bregman? We looked at Pena, and we kept trying to analyze where he should be in the lineup. And from you know, month to month and week to week and game to game, was he the guy that was capable of carrying this torch into the postseason? Now here we are, and you look at it. Bregman for 2 months has been on fire. We know that Yordan is the man that I don't think will see another good pitch the rest of this series. And you've got everybody, including the national media, talking about not only is he a slugger, he's one of the best hitters in baseball. And then you go down the up and down the list. We're not even talking about Kyle Tucker at right now, and that might be a good thing because Kyle Tucker has the capability of going off at any time and providing you yet another guy. Altuve, we're not talking about him because he was 0-for-4, but Altuve, you never have to worry about being a guy that can hit for pop and hit for average. This team may not be completely at its peak right now offensively, but that might be a good thing because so many guys have stepped up when they've been needed, and we know they're all going to be needed going forward. And now you get Altuve hot, and now you find Kyle Tucker again, and now you figure out whatever you're going to do with Diaz and some of these other guys, Mancini and others. You're in a position of strength that could get stronger as the playoffs go on, and that's a great position to be in.
Yeah, that's this offense, too, like somebody texted in, 713-780-ESPN, 3404. You don't beat the Astros 1-6. You beat the Astros 7-9, the bottom of this order, which is – that's kind of one of the reasons I don't really mind Jeremy Pena so much in the second spot, because I think it makes Jeremy Pena a better hitter hitting in front of Yordan. Hitting in front of Yordan would probably make everybody a better hitter, but it also extends the lineup. You find Yuli Gurriel, the three-hit performance, hits a home run. It's like, oh, man, could this be the Yuli Gurriel of the past? You're optimistic that it will be, that it will continue.
And even a Diaz. If Diaz is hitting seventh, yeah. I believe of all the things you can question about Diaz, the one thing you never question is he a stick? Can he make contact? Is he a major league hitter? Well, then the seventh spot is taken out of that little scenario. Now you're just analyzing 8 and 9.
I think that this – you have some pieces in the bottom of the order that can be a success, whether it's Chaz McCormick at times. Mm-hmm. Chaz McCormick can show you some pop. Now, not today. Jake Myers, look, what
it's
we
hard
saw –
hard to show you pop from the clubhouse.
Right. No. But, you know, he could get a pinch hit opportunity, something
true.
Like that. Christian Vasquez is somebody you're going to use in that 7-8-9 spot if he's used as a pinch hitter. Martin Maldonado, not a great hitter, but had a career high in home runs. Jake Myers, look, we don't know, but maybe he can be the old Jake Myers of last year. Now that elevates your bottom of the order. David Hensley was a pinch hitter in that spot. So, like, 7-8-9 isn't as deep on this year's lineup that it was in, like, previous years. I don't think it's the black hole that we saw
early
all
the
of
season.
The regular season,
yeah,
maybe
and,
early in the
and
season.
And I think because situationally is where 7-8-9 will be analyzed, not positionally. Because all season long, we were analyzing 7-8-9 positionally, going, whoever's going to be out there is going to be out there, and they're going to be out there for this game, and this is why it's going to be a problem for us in this lineup. Now, situationally, and because of the depth of your bench, whoever starts doesn't finish, and it doesn't matter. It's if a situation arises where I need a better stick or I need a better glove, I have options. If I need someone that's going to be pinch running, that's another option. But you look at it and say it's not the same as the regular season where you're going to say positionally that's who's going to be out there for the majority, if not all the game. Here, situationally, that could change in the fourth inning if 7, 8, or 9, especially 8 and 9 come up. And again, pitching matters.
Yeah.
Maldi could be pulled, but Maldi's not going to get pulled if it's JV or if it's Fromber. Maldi could be pulled later in a game.
Yeah, after they're out.
When you've got a couple ducks on the pond and you need a knock or a contact for a sac fly, that's where you could make the change. Center field is fluid. It's very fluid to me.
Yeah,
and again, that's why we're going to say everybody's going to have all eyes on Jake today, because that could change in a heartbeat based on the situation. If you're down or you've got a key offensive opportunity coming up middle of the game to late in the game, and Jake hasn't shown you anything offensively and he looks overmatched again, you're going to make a change,
yeah.
And you're going to feel just fine doing it.
I wouldn't be hesitant to do that either.
I wouldn't either.
Now, if you're up in the game, you feel like Jake is your better defensive outfielder, you're not going to do it. But if you're down 2-3 runs and it's the sixth inning, who cares? Like, you need offense. You got to do it quickly. You can't wait to his next at bat in the eighth.
And the other thing is, based on the depth I was talking about, you could even go to a Dubon because he gives you the wheels in the outfield defensively.
Ooh, gross.
And I know, we both are very much off the Dubon train, but I'm just saying, because you have so much depth in center field, whether it's Chaz or Dubon, you can burn Jake whenever you feel it's necessary, if you feel it's necessary. Because what matters is where you are in the series. If it's the difference between going back to Seattle 1-1 or having a chance to go up 2-0, I'm making all moves necessary, all changes that I feel like in Dusty's pawpaw gut that he feels like he needs to make, and I'm not looking back. Because if I'm in a position of strength, I might have a different philosophy. But if I'm looking to try and close the door in Houston and say I'm up 2-0 going in a position of massive strength, that's what I want, then if what you want in order to get it means you got to make tough decisions.
Yeah, I think that Dusty made those tough decisions in game one too, because he went to his bench in that game. We saw it the first, like it was like in two waves too when he went to the bench. We saw it earlier in the game whenever he went Christian Vasquez as a pinch hitter. He actually pinch hit for Chaz, which he put him in the eighth spot, and then he pinch hit for Maldonado right after that. And then later in the game in the ninth innings when we saw David Hensley. So Dusty has shown, and he even did this last year, that he's willing to go to the bench. I don't mind if it's early. Like, if it, just throw out a scenario. If Fromber's out of the game after five, like maybe he just goes five innings, two runs, pitch count gets up, something like that, and it's a tie game or you're down by a run in the fifth or sixth inning, I don't mind if that change comes that early. If it's a critical at-bat in the fifth or the sixth inning, Fromber's already out of the game, make that switch then. I don't care about making the switch early. It doesn't have to be the eighth or the ninth. If it's the fifth and a big at-bat, you do it. You do it right there.
I think you have to. I think that's the difference between regular season and playoff baseball, and the fact that when you have businesses decisions to make now, you had a comfortable kind of vacation mentality for a majority of the season this year. But when you're making business decisions, and business decisions are based on the return on investment and getting your ultimate goals as a company, guess what? Tough decisions are going to be made. Sometimes feelings are going to get hurt. But if it's the difference between having a chance to win or lose a ball game or win a situation, you got to make those tough decisions.
Yeah, it gives me more optimism that the Astros were able to win that game with the bats than with the pitching staff. Like, they bailed out Verlander. They bailed out Verlander with the offense. They put up some runs. They put up some runs late. Like, how often do we see the Astros rallying back? I think that the biggest deficit the Astros came from behind the entire regular season was four. They were down four runs three different times in the game against Seattle. So I'm very optimistic that the Astros were able to get it done with the offense. And then you're going to need some offense today with Luis Castillo on the mound.
Like, yeah, no
he's
doubt.
One of the best pitchers.
I think we talked last game about ultimate scenarios for this team. Ultimate scenario is you send a message early like Seattle did to you.
Absolutely.
And you get to Castillo early, and you get some key at-bats and get a run or two on the board, because now you're talking about a team that's already fragile that could probably produce coal out of their rear end and turn it into a diamond. Now you're talking about some really, really big situations that they're gonna feel real tight about, and that would be the ultimate way to kind of put Seattle reeling real early.
Like, early is always a factor, but I think it's more whenever you had that ending, right? A young team, hadn't been to the postseason
and coming off game one. Coming off game one, if you parlay that with, you know, sending a message early and getting to their ace, now you've got a totally different psyche for that clubhouse.
I think a 2-0 lead in this game for the Astros hits different than a 2-0 lead against a Yankees, a veteran team, because they're already feeling one type of way coming off of that game. Like, we talked about it a little bit earlier. If it's the other way around, Seattle jumps out to a 2-0 lead early, it, like, instills some confidence again. Like, do they have some doubt in the back of their mind? Probably. But it instills some confidence of, like, okay, we got Castillo on the mound. We're good. We can take one game in Houston. We get the split. That's exactly what we came to Houston for. We got home field advantage. We can win it back in Seattle. That, to me, is why, like, early in this game is more important than just your regular playoff game.
Well, and for the most part, everybody's focused between the pitchers and everything going on with game two on Castillo.
Yeah,
but you focus on the fact that if you're Seattle and you get down 2-0 early on, you look across the dugout, across the field, you realize they got a pretty damn good pitcher that we're facing too.
Yeah.
Now it's not like facing their 3, 4, or 5 starter in most rotations where you go, oh, we can get back in this thing, no problem. You're not facing their ace per se,
right. But
you're facing a really good pitcher that could really send a message and take a lead like that and make it work.
I mean, he's going to finish top five in American League Cy Young voting in Framber Valdez. That's like Luis Castillo versus Framber. I think it's pretty close to an even matchup. Like, you might give Luis Castillo a slight edge. Framber's numbers are better, but maybe you say Castillo has slightly better stuff. But I think the conversation has to go beyond that. It's Luis Castillo versus the Houston Astro lineup, and then it's Fromber versus the Seattle Mariner lineup. And I like that matchup from a Houston Astro perspective.
That's the bigger thing, too. This ain't even the Blue Jays, but this ain't anything that Castillo has really seen in this environment before. He's talking about looking down the barrel of a full lineup of major league hitters that have been there, done that, and done it on any stage with any kind of light brightness, and won.
And down 1-0.
Yep.
And down in the series.
That's, again, what makes the screws tighten just a little bit more. This isn't like opening up a 7-game series and saying, whether I win or lose, we're good. We're not good if we don't win this game, and it's all on your arm.
All right, we're going to switch over the conversation to ESPN975.com. Make way for the ESPN national broadcast of Mariners Astros. Come hang out with us. Wakefield Crowbar, 954 Wakefield Drive. Love to see you out here. Great place to watch the game. He's Belmer. Thanks to Brendan behind the glass. Blank Branham carrying the conversation. ESPN975.com. It's Killer Bees on ESPN975, ESPN925.